welcome to Deconstructor of Fun's Product Deep Dive. Today, we're going to cover Legend of Mushroom by Joy and Ice Games. So, hi, I'm Jen Donahoe. I'm the strategic marketing consultant at Beta Hat and Jade Inferno.
I'm Laura Taranto, senior director of product at Big Fish Games. And we have this super special guest.
Super special guest. This deep dive is going to be extra product, extra design heavy. And so we needed to bring in an expert in mid-core gaming. And so it just so happens to coincide with his deconstruction that went into the latest newsletter and blog post. Ken Landon, CEO of Super Secret New Studio. What the hell does that mean, Ken? What are you up to?
Thanks for joining. It means that we're not ready to talk to VCs yet. So, yeah, no outward branding, no disclosure of what we're working on. But yeah, I'm a CEO of a new startup. I joined it with a couple of people I worked with at Blizzard, friends who worked at Machine Zone, Scopely, et cetera. Quite a heavy pedigree there. But really excited to be on and talk about Legend of Mushroom. It's a great game.
Oh, so happy to have you. I just love talking to product nerds like you, and by nerd, with all due respect, the folks that are the best at this are nerds in all of the best ways. So what you're going to get from this video and this podcast, remember now we do both of these things. So we're going to give you an understanding of this really actually complex idle game. You're going to hear me shit on it, which is going to be really fun. And how it works, why is it making a lot of revenue? So why am I going to shit on a game that's making a lot of revenue? I will tell you, because as a player, we all have different motivations of why we play games. And this is one that doesn't spark joy for me, but it sparks joy for many, many people. So we're going to hear why. So coming out of this, you're always going to learn from these deep dives. How can you apply this to your own games? What are areas of improvement that would make this game a little bit better and more successful? And so we always want you to make sure that you can apply it to what you're doing. So we're going to kick off with an overview of the game if you're not familiar with it. So I'll go first. It's an idle RPG that made me realize that I personally hate idle RPGs. I will be role-playing the role of Cress on this podcast because I really absolutely hated playing this game. And Laura, I mean, next time we're really going to have to pick something more my speed for our next pod, because this is like two in a row. Well, Township wasn't that bad, although it wasn't nearly as bad as this one for me, but okay. All right. I'll shut up. What's the real summary?
You're starting to sound like Goldilocks. This game's too hot. This game's too cold. Why can't you just give me a game that I like?
Oh, that's
just
funny.
Just teasing. Real summary. Actually, I'm going to give a mediocre summary. And the reason, Ken is more of an expert in this space. But for those of you who haven't played Legend of Mushrooms, and if you're in the West, you probably haven't. Or if you're not playing mid-core games, you probably haven't seen it. We have a little bit of a slide deck, but I'll quote Ken directly, but I'll put in my own words. To me, this is like a RPG idle mix with I wouldn't even call this a game loop. I would call it a game spider web. And we'll go into it later and as to why. But imagine if you took the idle games we know and love. So you could, there's elements that might be reminiscent of Adventure Capitalist, which Ken has worked on. And then you take, old games. I would even say maybe like way back when, I think it was called Tap Tap Heroes or Tap Knights, where you have this auto battler and your whole goal is like just to level up and, take over the world, be the highest power player. But I'd rather have Ken describe more accurately how he would summarize this game.
Yeah, I think that you did a pretty good job. I mean, it really is one of these games that's centered on you gaining as much power as you can, but not really being punished for not being active all the time. They have the idle elements in there. Super, super deep and varied progression curve. So like lots and lots of different pieces of gear you can collect, lots of things that stack on top of each other in meaningful ways so that your power just escalates and escalates over and over and over. Lots and lots of chores to do. So like you'll log in the morning and you'll have 20 red badges, I think, that you have to go and clear. Some of them will be like free gyps of currency. Some of them will be a key-based unlock for running a dungeon. But there's just lots and lots to do, lots of things to make you feel like you're making meaningful progress. These games are very, very much about catering towards the players who have this need for feeling like they're making meaningful progress on some like chore. It's almost like an RPG version of a chore for players to do this type of game. this game in particular is kind of smart in that they've added some social elements that allow you to peacock your progression against other players. They still have a long way to go to like compare against other heavily socialized games, but there's not that many idle games, I would say, that have this sort of social comparison loop. And this is sort of like a good V1 to get us into like a more polished game in the future.
Nice, nice. When I worked on a lot of mid-core games at Scopely, we called it housekeeping. You know, all of the housekeeping items that you had to do as a player, you know, when on a daily, you know, basis to get your daily / weekly reward system. And this game is one of the worst housekeeping games I've ever played, where you're, it takes like 20 minutes. And I mean, I actually feel like I haven't accomplished anything, because by the time you finish all that, you collect like 50 diamonds and or gems, and the gems aren't worth shit in this game. So I'm pissed at it for making me, because I'm one of those people who can't have red dots anywhere on my phone, because it drives me crazy. It makes me feel like, ooh, Ken, you actually sent me an article on this. The feeling that there's an uncompleted task drives you to actually engage more, because as humans, we feel like we have to complete a task, which is why badges are there. But in this case, it drives me insane.
Oh, don't look at my phone.
Are you one of those people that has like 500 unread messages and like 16,000 unread emails? That would kill me.
Laura is.
I have 1,207 unread messages. The emails I clear, but the messages, I've given up.
That's hilarious.
How do you do? I mean, who talks? Well, thank God you respond to me. I mean, I'm thankful that I'm not one of the 12,000 that doesn't make it in. All right. So one of the things that we like to do on these deep dives is talk about takeaways right up front. This way you all get the best learning possible from all of the work that Ken has done in going through all this. So let's go through a couple of them. Ken, why don't you take the first couple and you and Laura kind of switch off, and I'll come up with the last one.
Absolutely. So the first one is to embrace the RNG drip. Make sure the gacha is well balanced. We'll dig more into that a little bit later in this talk, but one of the things that the game does really, really well, which, you know, anecdotally, a lot of our friends have reached out to us about, is this lamp pull system that they have in the game that's just a constant free gacha. So you have this sense of like, ooh, there's this great piece of gear that I just got, and or like between moments of lag of like totally crap gear, that crap gear is still meaningful to your progress, because it's, you know, how you level up your character and earn gold to dump into other progression systems. So that RNG is very, very meaningful. It's another learning that you know, Brawl Stars went into and they talked about at GDC recently. RNG can be a very, very strong component for retaining players. It's one of the key elements to a retention loop with varied rewards are super, super important. The second one is catch-up mechanics are extremely important. And once a player leaves in this game in particular, there's no way for them to compete in the future, which really will likely lead to them churning out. You know, I can see a world in which it's very difficult for their UA team to reactivate players into this game, because once they've been reactivated, they just feel super let down by their progress compared to where they were prior to leaving. And there's no way for them to get back in. I mean, when I say no way, like, you can, but you'd have to spend like literally hundreds of thousands of dollars to like get back in the top 20 of your server. And that feels terrible. So they need to figure that system out.
I'm going to let Jen cover the strong and positive social motivations, because there's one feature in this game I really like called the dormitory, and that's probably a negative,
you like
negative
that one?
Interaction okay. That I have three okay. retainers, and I tickle them every day. So
well, I'm gonna... I don't want to do the explicit check mark on this podcast. Easy there, Laura.
It's just a feather. It's just a feather.
Okay. All right.
But I will. There was one when we had a little bit of a pre-show talk, and we were talking about the never-ending battle passes. And if you ever think in a game, like if you look at one of the features you're designing and you think, I don't think I can make a battle pass out of this, this game should teach you, yes, yes, you can. This actually is a great example. If you want to see different ways to do stacking battle passes, multiple layered battle passes, different types of feature interactions, all of them have battle passes. And again, it ties very well into the point of the game. The point of the game is to grow your power, and they give you a lot of ways to do it. They basically want you to spend because the lowest tiers are not super valuable. You don't get enough resources and currency, but they provide ways to progress that I think that can easily be taken into any game you're working on, whether it's mid-core or casual.
Yeah, I actually, on this one, I put it in as a joke, in both in a good way and a bad way. As a player, I was like, oh, wow, which battle pass am I in, the farming one, or am I in the, you know, the other one, the mining one? I couldn't quite keep track. And then, you know, Kent, your earlier point is, unless you are fully spending at the full amount on every single battle pass and every single thing, there's no way for you to compete on your server. And it goes into your catch-up mechanic. When I was on back at Scopely on all the mid-core games, we had games that were live for, at the time, it was like 3 years. We actually had to increase the power and what we would reward people coming into the game for the first time so that they started at a higher level, so that they had at least thought they had a chance to catch up. Luckily, a lot of people don't do good math, and so they don't realize that they can't catch up until a little bit later. But in this game, I've already seen in just a couple weeks that I've been playing how much further away people are getting from me. Like, even in my own family, because you can tell by the mounts. Like, I finally got the spaceship or the airship mount. I was, you know, stuck on the surfboard for forever, and then the hoverboard. And that's a great way to kind of peacock to your other players. But so, I don't know. Be careful about too many battle passes, but also see it as an opportunity.
Yeah.
For those listening that haven't played the game, a family is a guild. So they call guilds, yes, in this game families.
Yeah, sorry about that. Everyone has their own branding for the clan, yeah, the guild, the whatever. Yeah,
the battle passes are insane. I was spending very heavily at the start of the game, and there was one battle pass, which was, I was just like, I don't really like this mini game, so I'm not going to engage with the battle pass. And that was a massive mistake. I ended up buying it like 4 or 5 days after I was first able to, but that first 4 or 5 days of not having it meant that I meaningfully dropped back in the progression pack, and then I just never recovered. It's super, super punishing. But yeah, one of the really strong sides that they have in this game is they have excellent early merchandising. And every single IAP offer that they offer you at the beginning of the game is extremely valuable. Like the amount of progression that you can push through with just the first, I think it's like a $1.99 pack, is significant. If you buy all three of the first gear packs that they offer, I think it's a total of $14 or $15, you can get easily to like level 50 in the game just off of those without having to do any of the other item mechanics. Like, your character will just power through with just those three pieces of items. And they end up stacking them in like the right prices. So they escalate from $1.99 to $5 to $10. And then they start adding in new systems. So like, they'll offer you a bundle pack for the system that just unlocked. Like, maybe you'll just have unlocked PALs, and then a new bundle pack will pop up for PALs. So that progression-based targeting is pretty powerful. The flip side of that is that it feels like they don't have PMs working this game, or they don't have like segmentation tech in place, because all of our whales will have been spending $99 on gold packs or something like that, and they'll still be offered the $2 progression pack. Yeah. There's no relevancy to their past spending behavior, which is something that we're running into in a lot of games recently. Like, even Brawl Stars has that problem where they just don't have any ability to target people's past spending behavior.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you on the merchandising, and I always preach to people, to my PM partners, it's like, hey guys, like, starter packs, early monetization, that dollar purchase, leveling up in value, you know, trying to capture people to make them feel really good and powerful about the game is a brilliant way to keep people. What we found at Riot was, once somebody made that first purchase, the chance of them coming in and making another purchase was incredibly, incredibly meaningful, let me say. So I agree with you on that. One other small thing we didn't have on our list I wanted to throw in there is, as someone of a certain age who has really shitty eyesight, the text and everything on this game is so insanely small. And I have an iPhone 15 Pro, so I don't have the big one. I have the little one. But for the love of God, we should all have a minimum font size that we use in our UI UX. And so maybe these, you know, the audience for this are people who have cat-like vision and have no problems whatsoever. But sometimes I'm getting my magnifying glass out and I'm like, what's this say here? I can't quite. So just just make sure that where you can, the icons that you use and the text that you use, try to make it make sense and make it legible. Okay.
So this is what we're describing as what is Legend of Mushroom. I recorded this. This is my level 72. We probably should have taken yours because I saw some screenshots of your account. You're like way above 100 now.
Yeah, I'm at like 115.
Laura, you're still on the surfboard? I'm level 70 and I have like a better mount than you.
Hey, this is the beauty of this game. There's multiple ways to
progress.
Laura's
only spent like $4 though, so.
I've only spent like $4. Right?
No, I've spent maybe $50 to $75. I got the cool little like propeller airplane thing.
We'll go into more detail and we'll show some screenshots of a further account. I'm now just you know, I'm at level 92 now. So I have progressed a bit, but just to give you everyone who's watching an idea of what this game looks like, and you can see the small text that Jen's referring to. But the pure scale of this is a little bit showing my daily tasks and just kind of what we talked about. There's just so much housekeeping to do as everything in the game resets. You're going through, that's the tickle. That's the retainer.
Oh, I missed the tickle.
But there's basically a lot of tasks that give you a little bit of power here and there, that you do every day. And then as mentioned, it's the spend that really propels you forward.
I didn't figure out the prayer thing until recently, that there are levels and you kind of like pick which ones you want to lock and which ones you want to like re-roll. And so I have like all A's and now I don't want to re-roll anything. I'm like, well.
But then you can't level up the statue without re-rolling. Yeah.
Oh.
If you lock everything, it's locked in.
They have different sets there too as well. So like if you're doing PvP, you're going to have your PvP set on. If you're doing, you'll do your PvE set as well. It's quite smart.
I'm only at level 3. Yeah, so I'm not. I haven't unlocked the rest of the sets yet. The first one unlocks at level 5. The second one unlocks at level 5. So I keep having to just pray to level up the statue. So I leave one unlocked, hoping I don't get another A, because now I have all A's, which is the higher class, the more powerful buffs. And now I'm like, oh, what do I do? I just have to do my little one roll and get a little bit here and there until I hit the next set to unlock more of them.
So we're looking at the mine. I felt like I was playing Township, quite honestly. It's like the exact same thing.
Is the only thing I believe that was different is in Township, they have a different radius of what you can see underneath the unmined tiles. So I believe they show you here everything you can get in all areas, where Township only, I think, shows you one or two squares out. So you have to mine extra to be able to see if there's something under it or use one of the larger clear tools.
Yeah, it's strange to me that this doesn't track with the RPG nature of the game at all. It's like literally just mining minigame thrown in on top. It shows that it doesn't really matter what your minigames are. People are still going to engage with it because it's something else to do.
Well, we saw that in Whiteout Survival as well. Like they had a fishing game that was, you know, very hyper casual focused. And I think the insight goes to, we've talked about this 1,000 times, that these hyper casual mini games that are utilized in UA that people find very simple and very engaging can be something that you utilize inside your game, especially if you utilize it in UA and there's a reason for you to do it. I think everyone kind of can gravitate towards, oh, I get it, like this is super easy. But when you get later in the game and you've got like 1,000 hammers, or not 1,000, 100, I think I get like 100 hammers. It takes me like 10 minutes to clear the mine. I'm like, I don't want to spend my time on this. Like, allow me to clear this faster.
So I think this video goes on for a little bit. I think it's 10 or 12 minutes. So we can jump to, you know, why we selected this game, despite me pushing Jen. Jen's like, oh, I don't want to do this game. This game is, there's no joy. There's no happiness here. And I'm like, but look at these numbers. Look at these numbers.
Yeah, it's a top 10 in the world grossing game right now. Or it was when we wrote our article. Yep. It was number 10 in the world.
Yeah, it's still tracking really high. When you look at it across countries too, you do see a lot of like Eastern, you know, Japan, South Korea revenue. Did it launch there before it launched in the US? Is
launched,
that why
you
we
can
think?
See the downloads there in February, a massive install rate from Japan and South Korea. It was December and January was South Korea. January and February was Japan. And then, you can see it there in the bottom chart.
So sorry, if you're on a podcast, this is what we do now. We have a deck and we have gameplay and we have videos. This is why we encourage everyone to watch us on YouTube as well. And so we'll try to explain as much as we can for the podcast folks that listen to this as well. But just so you know, March looked fantastic across many countries, U.S. coming in to be more of a top country since it's launched. So now we are on to charts, and all of this is data AI, right? Oh, well, now it's called Sensor Tower. Tower AI. whatever. Every time we talk about it, I'm just going to say App Annie, I'll be like, Crest. So this chart is DAU on the top and ARPDAU on the bottom. You guys want to talk a little bit about this?
I was just going to say that it's already noticeable that their DAU in Japan and South Korea is starting to decline significantly. Like it's difficult to see on this chart the way it's stacked, but they're seeing significant declines. You can also see that in the previous charts on the revenue. They're already starting to fall off. I think you and I had originally talked about this game likely resulting in the Sharkfin type monetization and retention, and it's starting to show up in charts. And you'll be able to see that now from these leading countries like Japan and South Korea.
And I would assume it's likely due to what you mentioned before, like that there's no way to meaningfully catch up. This is about people that are going to love this game want to be number one. And once you take one step back, if you can't meaningfully catch up, it's going to be very difficult to keep people engaged. With these charts, usually we stack them in other episodes. We've shown them by app or just overall. These are specifically for those watching divided by country, so you can see the split and how certain areas of the world, you know, this is performing very well in certain countries over other ones. And the starkness between where the spend is, the downloads, and where users are is not necessarily what we would see like in a game like Township or some of the previous games we've deconstructed.
You've heard of Heroic Labs by now, and we keep talking about them because in today's mature market, you need every edge to be successful. Rather than spending those precious company dollars on building game tech, focus on building your game and shipping it. Get into your players' hands faster and grow your community. Heroic Labs is battle-tested partner and friend of the podcast. Their tech enables you to be flexible, creative, and scale for success. Heroic Labs has your tech stack covered. Whether you're looking for a world-class back-end game server, an amazing game development framework, fantastic live ops tooling, or reliable mass scalability, Heroic Labs has solutions for all of these challenges. And it's not just us at Deconstructor of Fun praising Heroic Labs. The company works with some of the world's biggest publishers on many of the beloved games. Focus on your game, save a big chunk of cheese, and avoid tech risks with Heroic Labs. This podcast is brought to you by Data AI. Now, you're asking, didn't they get acquired by Sensor Tower? They did. And that's awesome. Here's why. Whether you loved using data.ai or Sensor Tower, the combined company will offer customers even stronger and more detailed insights on the full digital customer journey. Exciting times lie ahead as Sensor Tower and Data AI join forces. Go to data.ai or sensortower.com and get on board with undeniably the best data partner in the business. Now, back to the episode.
All right, are we ready for core? Look, you're core. I don't know how you do this. It's amazing how you should develop.
Somebody should
software.
Pay you to be a product manager, almost like a senior director level product manager, I would say.
And that's very kind, because I have to say, Ken did an awesome job in his article going through all the progression verticals. I gave up after a little bit in this doing this game. It's not even a loop. It is a spider web, because there were so many that I was like, one, they're not going to fit on one slide. And if I can get them, it's going to be illegible. But I did my best to go through at least the main bits. So I'm gonna go through this, and Ken, I encourage you to jump in, correct me, and add color as I describe this. Okay. So we have our basic loop, which is what we were discussing about how you light these lamps. They're a little bit like a, you don't know what you're gonna get. It's usually a piece of gear, and if it's better than your current gear, you basically have the choice of equipping it. Or if you're silly, you would sell it. But why would you sell it? Because then you don't get more power, but you do get coins and XP. So you light a lamp, takes a lamp to light a lamp. You get some sort of armor, and then you have two choices, equip or no. If you don't equip, coins XP, you get towards level up. And if you level up enough times, when I say enough times, this is like, Ken's at level 100 something, I'm at 92. It's like every 30 or so, 20, 30 levels, you get basically an evolution choice. Mm-hmm. And I think I chose wrong. I chose the axe guy and
spend those gems.
The berserker.
You spend the gems to swap classes. But yeah.
Yeah. It costs 4,000 gems to swap classes, I've discovered, because Ken's recommendation is, why don't you, archers are better if you're going to do the idle mechanic. I was like, I had no idea. So you get this choice to evolve. It all goes back into powering up. If you do equip your armor, that's another form of your power. So you get stronger. This is better for battles. And then you start to get things like powering up your skills and pals. So in addition to the kind of class you are, you also have skills, which I'm thinking of, like, they're like magic kind of
spells.
Like,
yeah, more or less. Yeah.
Yeah.
Your spells,
traits. There's a ton of them. You get shards of them. All the shards you combine together to level up your skills, which again make you stronger. You want to power up these skills and pals. And pals are like pets. They also are shards that you level up, and then they make you stronger too. And then that basically makes you stronger to participate in your idle battle or your arena battle or your PvP. And by battling, you basically get more lamps. So I'd say that's how I would kind of describe the core loop. How'd I do?
You're pretty good. I think there's some arena battle rewards that are in addition to lamps. Specifically, you get like PvP currency that you can then use inside of PvP shops, which further on in the game, they allow you to ascend your character. I think there's also some ways you can buy like PvP only pets and skills. Maybe I might be confusing some different shops from the events, but I know that there's exclusive things you can buy inside of a PvP store as well that you use PvP currency in.
Part of the housekeeping is doing a lot of the, you know, clearing out, getting your diamonds. You also get diamonds from, they have like a mini task system. I find that actually it's almost as fun as clicking on the lamp, seeing I've accomplished the task, because then I end up getting tickets, which are for the gacha pulls, which is not the lamp. It's a separate gacha pull system. And then I get more diamonds. I believe there's a slide later that'll show what the gacha system looks like, but it's basically insert tickets, get shards. Oh, it's if you go back one. Yeah. So if you look at skills and pals on the right hand side, you basically, yeah, this is your gacha and it gives you shards. You get enough shards, you evolve, level up your skill or your pal, and then you get more power.
So just what's on the artwork, what's really funny is it is like a literal gacha machine from Japan. Or it's the, you know, the claw, yeah, like in Toy Story, oh, the claw that comes down. And so I don't know what those games are called, but it's gacha basically, they, you know, they're like, yeah, this is your gacha machine. Here you go. Like, we're not even going to pretend like it's
not
that.
On the Deconstructor of Fun article covering this, we have an animation of what this looks like as well. The pull and then how it displays out your skills, your pals, and then what that looks like on the skill screen.
And if you play with sound, it sounds like a slot machine.
Oh, I don't play with sound, so I wouldn't have done that.
Yes, it sounds. Oh. I basically felt like I was walking into a casino once I started listening to the music and sounds in this game.
Do you guys play with sound? Sorry, like I never play
extremely
with
rarely.
Sound
like on my games, I usually will spend maybe an hour or two just getting a sense for the sound and then turn it off. Because I play with my 1 year old while she's sleeping, and there's a lot of different reasons why I would not want to have sound on. When we were at Congregate, we did a study and found that like less than 9% of all players listened with sound on or play with sound on. Mm. In our portfolio of games, that's like hundreds of games at Congregate.
Yeah, I thought I had heard similar research that not many people turn sound on. But then what was interesting when I've talked to like the YouTube folks, now again, this is YouTube on mobile, not gaming, but they say most people listen to watch YouTube or engage with YouTube with sound on, because we were talking about ads. And I guess that makes sense, right? If you're watching a video. But a lot of people are starting to turn the sound off, like when they're on the train or on this. And that's why so many videos have captions now. And so they're seeing that go down. with not as many people engaging with sound on YouTube and even TikTok. And so it just means a lot for your UA ads too. If you're going to advertise, you need to think about captioning what sound looks like on and off. Anyway, so sorry, that was a tangent. I was just curious on sound. Laura, back to you on your web game loop spider chart. Anything else you want to hit?
The only thing I will add is they do have this, they have a little couple side loops that are the coefficient of performance. So this is, you invest in areas of the game that make your future investment in the game easier. So you can, if you do these side quests, like the planting is a good example of it. They have this planting mechanic. It requires different resources, but it gives you power percentage increases. So it's not necessarily direct, like you're not getting power points, but you're getting... you're basically getting more power or some other efficiency. So the mine, which we showed previously, you're getting all this random stuff. You're getting ore, diamonds, tools, and you're also getting gacha tickets. It costs tools, which refresh over time, but it has a research, basically a tech tree. And doing the tech tree raises your efficiency so that when you need to generate pickaxes or you want a bump in your HP, if you engage in these other two areas, then it makes the rest of your power progression easier.
Those are like the two main mini games that are unlocked fairly early in the game. You have the dormitory, which unlocks later, as well as parking wars. And those are very, very similar systems. I found the dormitory to be a little bit weird thematically, like not very politically correct. You're literally like capturing other humans and enslaving them and tickling them for resources. Very strange. The parking wars feature is similar to the dormitory, but you don't capture other people. You elect into other slots, but with this sort of like master type psychology as well. Like you're trying to be on the person's plot of land that is the most powerful so that you can stay there without getting pushed off by other players. On the dormitory, you're trying to capture other players and you want to be captured by somebody powerful so that if somebody tries to steal your players from you, that your master will defend those people. And it's a very interesting like micro mechanic. They have a bunch of different variants of the core combat loop inside of the daily key unlocks. So they have the lamp thief, which is how you get your majority of lamps every day. They have the molten dungeon, which is how you get, I think it's gems and gacha tickets. They have a system for your mount, a system for your artifact, and your system for relics. Later down the line, they also have, which is like unlocked very, very far down the line, they have another system for your class awakening. So this stacks up. Like you basically have to engage with, I think it's now 9 different subsystems every single day. Each of these subsystems, if you're not using the autocomplete feature, takes like, I don't know, 5-10 minutes. So like already at an hour a day, just completing all these subsystems if you're playing optimally. And really, they are just like reskins of little micro loops, right? Like their entire purpose is to increase your stats. You have to engage with every single one of them a day. If you don't, you'll fall behind in progression. And, you know, it feels to me like a UA play, like they're making mini games that they think would translate well to like UA adverts and not get them in hot water. But yeah, like the variety of progression verticals means that they have a lot of different systems that they can monetize off of. You know, to our earlier point, if there's 9 different systems in this game that we're saying are meaningful progression verticals, they have 9 different battle passes and there's $12 worth of spend depth on each one of them. Typically on top of the battle pass, each of these systems has IP purchase packs related to them. Their live ops is also built off of these systems. So they'll have like a live ops event that is go and pull pals and we'll give you extra rewards just by pulling. Or this will be your mount event. You'll get battle pass points for leveling up your mount. And for this week, we'll put you on a leaderboard and your rewards will be this extra rare mount that you can only get through this event. So it's an interesting way to like add live ops content, but it starts to feel like a chore. For some players like me that who are sort of addicted to these idle RPG games, this is the right balance of the amount of them, but I can see how this would heavily overwhelm people. Once you get past like 3 or 4 of these, doing them daily is insane. Like it takes a lot of time.
Oh yeah. That's me. Fuck this. So the farming one where, so please do not have timers that are like 5-second timers where you're going to sit there and make me wait for like 5 seconds. Like, I don't I don't understand, like, when you're farming something, so especially on this screen, right? So when you harvest, it takes like 5 seconds to harvest. And I'm like, well, why are you doing that? I don't. Yeah, watch I'll this. Show.
So this is like the picking and the planting takes time,
one,
which
two,
doesn't
three,
really make sense.
Four,
it does not
five.
Need to be that like, long. I think it has to do with something of a server check. They're like actually checking to see if you are allowed to pull that thing. There's probably some backend code reason for that, but it does not need to be 5 seconds. It could be 1 second animation and they can still do the same amount of checks.
That aggravates me.
Yeah, that part I do find frustrating. And then Ken was talking earlier about the parking wars. So this is the parking lot. So as an example, this lot's full.
Oh, I haven't unlocked this yet.
Yeah.
I'm a mere 70, so.
Where are you parked?
I think I parked in a friend's lot just because, but they could be helpful to hear your take on like how this thing works. Because I'm a little confused.
Did you know that you
can
park multiple cars at the same time or multiple vehicles at the same time?
Yeah. No, I did not know that. Multiple.
And basically all this does, you've put yourself out there and you're generating idle rewards for yourself. The rewards that you're generating are dependent on the vehicle that you park as well as its level. You can now level these up on your mount screen, but other players can come over here and attack you. And in doing so, you see remodeled there all the way to the right on your screen. In doing so, they'll kick you off of that spot and take all the resources that you've already farmed there. So you're incentivized to go onto a spot where the owner of that plot of land is very powerful. So they protect you from being killed. Ideally, in a game that has like really strong social, there'd be some sort of social contracts or like there's additional benefits and agreements that you can make with the player to like, yeah, I only want my best friends to be on this plot of land. In this game, there's none of that. You can just literally choose anybody's slot. The first come, first serve, just join the whale. Mm. The whale can also kick you off the slot, which is very strange. There's very weird social interactions in this game where the heaviest spending players, are sometimes they're in your guild, sometimes they're not. But if they're in their guild, they still will kill you because you're the only option for them to kill. And they need to kill you for some progression currency inside of an event or just for like leaderboard rewards. The entire top 50 players in my game, in my server, are all in the same guild. And they all have to fight each other every week for PvP placement. Which feels very weird. Like you would feel like they should be fighting other guilds at the least. But there's a heavy focus on like me winning versus my guild winning. But which doesn't really grok well with me once you have a guild system in the game. It's very strange.
Yeah, that's weird.
So this is what the guild looks like. It's a little, navigating it is a little bit strange and kind of related to how the text is too small. Some of the UX interactions in this game are challenging. Yeah.
There's no reason for this screen to function like this, where you have to like manually move around to get to different places. It's super frustrating.
It's super frustrating.
You just have to move a little bit so you can see it, but you can still tap on the lava. I mean, you don't have to be in front of it, but you do have to like move yourself a little bit. I think, Ken, it's the peacocking,
there's value,
right?
There.
Like this is just showing off like where you are amongst your clan.
We cover this a little bit in the article. That showing off amongst your peers is the key reason why people play these games and the key reason why they continue to spend $20,000 in a month. I have this mount that is exclusive and only available via the leaderboard reward. And you can see it there. That is the key place that all the whales will show it off. I have this weapon that is an event weapon. And those are the few items that they actually show on that screen. They show your helm, they show your weapon, they show your mount, right? And that's all you really need to show. Those are the things they're merchandising and monetizing off of.
I feel like I'm the only one with not a cool sword now. So it's working.
I bought the mask and the sword or the artifact. They call it an artifact, I guess.
Yep.
I did some of those early because I spend in games because I also want to make sure that I didn't even catch up to you guys. I didn't spend enough. It did make the early part of the game feel so much more fulfilling that I was blasting through things when I made some of those purchases. I think Ken, you said this earlier, but not only are those purchases low price points that get you to engage and feel good about spending more, and they offer you a lot of dollar price items with 1,000% value, right? Like I think we all know is the PMs, when you showcase the value in a percentage, it helps players understand that they're getting a discount because so many people want to buy on a discount. and it made me feel good about spending the money. And I think that's another reason why they are seeing so much early monetization, is that the value translates to gameplay value.
Very one-to-one.
Yeah, and it feels very fulfilling. And so this, again, is why stacking your price points, starting with very low. Some people are like, why would I charge $1, Jen? Like, what? I could get so much more. But if you start there and then you introduce the $4.99 and then you introduce the $9.99, the chance of those players graduating through the ladders of the price points is so much higher.
Absolutely.
It also is in the battle pass in terms of two tiers, cheap tier, more expensive tier.
Yeah. And the people who are min-maxing and competing, they're doing both, right? They're just, that's a way to increase the value on that $9.99 tier.
And this is what we mean by there's multiple, there's battle passes and battle passes and battle passes. I mean, and also there's just so many things to purchase.
They do this stinky thing, and Whiteout Survival did it too. So at the top of the screen, there's usually a little chest there. Actually, I don't know if it's in the growth pack.
Oh, it's here.
Yeah,
I've already
so that
claimed
little
it.
Chest, you've claimed it today. So
I did
every
my
day, every single thing you can tap into is badged, and you know, and they give you a reward, but the reward is like, it's like somebody throwing you a penny or the lowest currency possible. And again, it does play to people like me who are like, ooh, am I missing something by not clearing all of my badges? And so now I'm trying to like optimize and get efficient about, okay, well, do I collect my badges at the end of my session or at the beginning? Because sometimes I'll clear all my badges and then I'm playing and then they're all up again. And I'm like, oh, I did not do that efficiently.
You guys are also West Coast, right? The server reset time is 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
So if you're playing around 9, your badges will reset at that time.
Yes. I am very aware from my Gossip Harbor and Travel Town exactly when that reset happens, which is like 4 or 5. Depending on daylight savings, because it does switch with daylight savings.
Hey game devs, are you tired of dealing with complicated payment processes all over the world? Well, Exola's got your back with Exola PayStation. It has a simple, user-friendly interface that makes it easy for players to pay for your games and in-game content however they want. And because the Exola PayStation user interface is adaptive and accessible on smartphones, tablets, and PCs, your players will have a seamless experience no matter their preferred device. Players can save their favorite payment methods for future purchases, and on mobile, even charge purchases directly to their phone carrier bill. On the back end, you can customize your checkout with game-specific integration options like sidebars and iframes, as well as change colors, fonts, and images to make PayStation look and feel like a natural part of your game. Ready to see Exola's PayStation in action? Visit exola.pro/payments-dof or visit the link in this podcast description. The games industry is experiencing unprecedented growth, with global revenues projected to reach a staggering $268 billion by 2025. But with more players than ever connecting across platforms and devices, how can your game stand out against the competition? AppsFlyer has created AppsFlyer for Games to help you unlock your players' true LTV by providing a wealth of game measurement solutions, unique industry insights, and proven best practices. Our dedicated hub is packed with innovative products, industry partnerships, and unrivaled expertise to ensure your game brand adapts and thrives. We understand that every game is unique, and AppsFlyer's data-driven insights allow us to cater to your specific needs. We know that in today's evolving landscape, staying ahead of the curve is crucial. Trust in AppsFlyer for Games to guide you through this exciting journey. We have the tools, the knowledge, and the passion to help you succeed in this ever-expanding landscape. Together, we'll conquer new worlds, both real and fantasy, break records, and create gaming experiences that leave a lasting impact. Get in touch with AppsFlyer for Games today and unleash your game's true potential. AppsFlyer for Games, supercharging the gaming landscape.
Any other parts we want to show that we want to cover with the game live, or should we start going into some of the areas where we think it can be improved?
Like, we can talk about how you would improve the gacha. If you pull up the gacha right now, or actually pull up the PAL screen. This screen translates pretty well what's wrong with their gacha system, is how sharding works. Their gacha is a shard-based gacha, which means that you have to, every time you pull, you get a high volume of shards, pulling 30 items at a time. But there's typically, you need hundreds of shards at the lower levels to be meaningful. At the higher levels, you need like 3, 4, 5, 6 of them to be meaningful. And you never really get the sense that you earned anything significant after the first pull of something. Yeah. And it's a really bad translation for money. Additionally, like the utility of them is poorly designed. If I send you a screenshot of my screen, I have most of the skills unlocked now, including all the way up to the highest tier of skills. I don't use most of them. I use that little shield bubble yeah. thing and the healing one because that's how I survive boss levels. Like they're designed in a way that you're supposed to try to just like quick equip your most highest tier stuff. Yes, but if you do that, you're not playing optimally. Like, and that's like a weird learning. Why would you allow people to just quick equip the highest rarity stuff, but then not have the most valuable skills be the highest rarity? Like there's no defensive skills at the highest tier. And that means that I'm just going to get instantly killed at some point when the boss content gets really difficult.
Oh, interesting.
But if you put that little mushroom bubble, what is it? You have like in the middle of your screen right there. Yes, shroom shield. Yes. So that's one of your two defensive ones. And the one right next to it is your healing skill. Those are like the two most powerful skills in the game. And they are like mid-tier rarity. Putting those on will keep you shielded from in boss fights and healed. Especially if you're not playing on auto mode. If you play on manual mode, you can stagger the shield from that, the mushroom shield, and then the heal. If you play on auto, they'll proc at the same time, and then you'll be healing yourself while you're at full health, and it won't work. The auto logic in the game is not the greatest.
There is nothing worse than when I would sink like a couple thousand gems, not as much as other people, and I have there's no meaningful progress to any of the individual skills or pals. And I'm like, I just got all this stuff. To be fair, I did the quick equip because I'm not a min-maxer as much, but I would fully expect to see if I've 5,000 sunk, which is what, maybe seven gachapils-ish, six, seven gachapils, then I thought I would get something that would be upgraded to the point where the game would, when I did quick equipped, it would be a noticeable increase where there'd be recommended me something stronger. And that just
for comparison in Genshin, I'll use Genshin because it's a best practice in my mind. If you're pulling 10 heroes at a time and you're pulling 16 times, you get an automatic 5-star character in their game. And that character unlocks meaningfully new gameplay, right? Like the way that those hero gacha games play together is that by every new character has a new ability that interacts with the map and the world in a new way. And you have combinatorics that allow you to stack different characters together to have additional new utility on top of that. This game does not work that way at all. So like the utility that you get from the skills and the pals is super low, and the value translation of how much money I'm spending to the power I'm getting when I do that is super, super poorly translated to the player. So that's probably my biggest one. I can't see that system monetizing very well for them. I would imagine that if there was an iteration on this game, they need to look at the gacha system very heavily.
Yeah. Makes sense.
I think the next big area, we can talk a little bit about optimizing ad placements briefly.
I don't even really notice them. Even the opportunity for ads. How do you even get
click
that
on the
one? Oh, it is now bringing your exact point up. It is a very small button next to the title of the dungeon you're in the main battler.
What? Let me get my magnifying glass because I can't see.
Then you can also. As part of your daily,
the two little,
and then part of your daily tasks, you're going, as Ken mentioned, you're going to the dungeon. You're assaulting the lamp thief to get lamps. If I remember correctly, the keys from the Chrono Tower are what upgrade your mount. I can't remember what the ancient city does. There's this.
That's your relics.
Oh, this one is the relics. Yeah, and then you basically get a certain amount of keys, and then you basically what the ads enable you to do is
run more keys. Yeah.
So you can watch it, get more keys to get more lamps, currency for relics, or what are the clock winders for the mount?
Those keys are valuable. They're capped in the store as well. There's not very many of them. I think you can spend a few dollars a day on keys. There's no way to dump $1,000 into the keys. That's 0 of 1 packs available for you right there. Yeah. Not a great monetization system, but the ad side of it means that the ad view is quite valuable. And one of the first purchases I made in this game was that no ads purchase. This thing was like $9 and never have to watch ads again. And I get like the benefit of what would have been maybe 12 ad placements worth of that then throughout the day. Another place you can get it ads is for fertilizer in the a field system. And I think,
which is Shroomy Farm.
They're applying once you run out of fertilizers.
Oh, I have so so much that I may not trigger the ad. oh, and then you also get it for pickaxes, which I
any of the mining boosters.
Oh yeah, when you're when you run out of your mining stuff.
Yeah.
But there's not a single vertical that is like exclusive to ad monetization, which is interesting to me because Legend of Slime, which this game is made is based off of, does have that. There's a vertical in Legend of Slime that is monetized extremely well through ads, and they didn't carry it over to this game. I don't know why. It would have increased their ad revenue significantly because players would have just watched it every single day. I think it's because their whole entire transition away from ads revenue into IP revenue means that most of the players who are IP spenders are going to be spending on that no ads placement anyways, and therefore they would have not monetized as heavily had they kept one of the verticals to be ads only.
All right, should we move to last improvement point? And I mean, I have a big gripe with this. I have a gripe with the PvP matchmaking. That was my biggest complaint. When I go to the arena and I'm trying to do, tell me someone else is frustrated with this. I have four challenge tickets. Yeah. Am I going to compete against any of these players? No, because then I will lose trophies. Like, I'm going to lose this battle. And the I don't know why they're pairing me with these types of people. Tell me why.
here's something else. So you'll notice that red, right? There's a little bit of red. Anyone who's red, you definitely can't beat.
Exactly.
So hit refresh.
Oh, there's
and you'll
a green.
Get like a, then you'll get a green.
But that's one of 10.
And you might not even beat that person.
Yes, right? That's so the worst. When it's green, I should win and I do not win.
Oh, you're winning this one.
No, all the time for me.
Yeah, this let me.
Oh, good job for you. Yeah. Yeah, I stopped because I was getting my ass kicked.
Yep, one of 15 now. There was one battle of 15 that was winnable for me, and I don't understand why they're organizing the matchmaking this way.
They're basing it off of your points that you've gained. So you have 972, and if you press challenge, they're pairing you against like-pointed people instead of like-powered people.
That's
because these players that they're showing you right now have not probably challenged anybody, those players are not farming points. So your pool of people you're attacking is heavily skewed towards powerful AFK players.
I want people I can actually have a decent battle with.
Dumb.
Like give me a couple points above, couple points below, but make sure of my five. It's something that actually gives me at least the belief that I have a chance of winning, even if it's a little outside of where my power is.
And to our point earlier, like, these top three players may all be in the same guild and they're only ever going to get points if they fight each other. So you're like knocking your friend down to boost yourself up, which does not feel great.
Okay. I got to be honest. I played the ranked match quite a bit and I know it's leagues. So I think I'm in gold five. I don't know how. I have no idea how I got here. I just kept challenging people and it kept having me compete against other players in leagues higher than mine. And it left me in a state of constant confusion.
I didn't even know there was ranked.
Instead of doing like a random challenge, do a targeted challenge. So like one of these people that's the thematic difference between the arena and the cross ranked is arena is only you can like select a list, but here you have to like be pick and choose who you're actually targeting from this like I don't know 50 people that you're going up against. You're gonna get demoted, by the way, if you don't attack one of these people. You should probably try to farm that.
Yeah.
There's decent rewards for this. The better league you're in, the more placement rewards you'll get, and then you'll be able to farm items from the shop. That is if you continue to play this game after this talk is over.
Fuck no. Oh, I'm in silver. I didn't realize. So it's cross-server challenge, right? Cross-server ranked match.
Exactly. So we touched on this earlier. I think this is a great example of how features that could actually target specific player types and be helpful to the game are not surfaced well. One thing I do want to call out for very poor surfacing is the soul embed. This took me forever to remember how to find.
I don't understand this. I was going to be like, can you please teach me what the hell this is? Because I even got my magnifying glass out and tried to read it and still don't understand what's going on here. But that's okay, fine. Yeah. I don't really care. I mean,
it's just another progression vertical that, like, you have to minigame, and there's a gacha inside of it. There's a ladder inside of it. It has its own currency. There's a fusion system so that they can, like, I don't know, work towards the players who like fusing. Every single minigame in this game makes me feel like they're trying to spin an ad off of it. Like, there's now they're like, oh, you have to fuse souls together to get a better soul here. There's a ladder that you have to climb with ladder. Like, this whole entire thing is like a UA play in my mind. But from a gameplay perspective, it's just another system that you have to farm. And if you don't, you'll fall behind.
So what I hate about it is, it is basically you're climbing this ladder, which is very similar to the dungeons. It's just presented in a different format. It is a dungeon, but it's separated into its... If I need to do a dungeon to get relics and I enter it through the relic menu, I don't understand then why. What I should be able to do then, if I want to get these clock windy things, what I would expect if they're going to follow the same behavior, and it's about establishing basically things that inherently make sense. So if you're going to have... like basically a separate currency to be leveling up things like your relics or your mounts. The way I do it is through the dungeons, and that's a loop. The soul embeds completely break that pattern and have me go through a completely different kind of. And it's very frustrating, and it requires players to remember where things are. And that is one big gripe I have about the game. If you want to expand your audience, it needs to be much more intuitive. There's no reason for me to have to try to memorize the paths of tapping here and there to remember how to get to specific things in the game.
They have an additional slot for it as well inside of your like dungeon key page. If you click on the X, like, just add it down there. Just add it below all these things. Why not just put it in that coming soon section, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. The way that they have tabs within, you know, you go to something and then there's so many tabs to click over. Like, that's why when you were like in the arena, I actually think I had at one point finally clicked on that because they badged it, right? So they badge things in a way that they do use badging well to help you find things to try to teach you. It's almost like signposting, but not incredibly well done. Like, there's nothing that kind of takes you to where you need to go. They're marching you down the path so that you kind of get to know where things are. And I think that's why they do the badging, right? They're trying to teach you. Maybe one day you'll pay attention as you go into these things. But with the soul things, I think I'm hitting cognitive overload in this game, even though they've layered things, right? We talked about how, you know, some things don't unlock, but they introduced the soulstone thing, and I was just like, I don't even know what you're trying to tell me these things are. Which ones are valuable? Which ones do I merge? Which ones do I destroy and scrap? Like, they're all mechanics I've played in other games, but I'm like, okay, well, which one do you want? And then, by the way, when we get to ads, I pulled some ads for us to take a look at. They actually aren't even doing the mini games in the ads. They're doing like fake gameplay. So I pulled some US ads, and recently, so as we record this, it's April 19th, and they're actually only running two ads. They were running more, but it looks like they weren't performing as well. So one of these that you see here in the top middle, it looks like an RPG. It doesn't even look like anything that this game has. Again, you know, kind of like a fake ad. They have a static ad below that makes it look like an old school Zelda game. And then they have this ad over here on my left, which, you know, kind of makes it look like a side-scrolling squad battle. Like, none of these actually look like anything that is going on inside this game. And so, they're trying to signal RPG. And I think if I were to watch this, I get RPG out of it. But what a huge opportunity to leverage some of those mini games, make them playables. And then they're in their game. They're there. They followed the strategy. They're just not using it with UA. So it's pretty funny. Ironic, actually. Yeah. So maybe that's my one key takeaway from them is, like, go do more fake ads off your mini games, guys, like everyone else does.
We covered in a previous talk on this was that some of the ads that they're, the static ads that they're running on Twitter are IP theft ads, where they'll have like Star Wars AT-ATs walking on the screen, or there's like three different Star Wars ads that they have with Legend of Mushroom characters replacing like Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker. It's very, very illegal. They also have a Pokemon ripoff where like your pal looks like a very iconic Pokemon. It's a very, very strange direction they've taken, but yeah, it works.
Interesting. I used the data AI creative poll, so those didn't pop up, but if they're doing, like, please don't do that, everybody. Like, that is IP infringement. That is a way to make enemies in this industry, and you don't want to be the marketer that does that. But perhaps the studios in China, they don't care. And in many cases, those folks don't know about IP and know that you can't just do that. But we're here to tell you don't do that.
Shall we end on a positive note? I feel like I feel like I came down a little bit hard on the game. There's a lot to love. Well, I think there's a lot to love, but then there's a lot of room for improvement. I would just ask, Ken, what's your favorite part of this game? From a PM, what do you think is the strongest product design in this space that they've done?
Definitely the lamp loot system. This like constant dopamine drip of gear that's free into the player, and it's driving super long sessions. I know we talked about earlier, like this system can enable you to keep your app open for like 8 hours at a time while you're just churning through all these free lamps you've gotten. Keeping a user in the game is how you keep them spending, right? Like, you can't spend money if you're not in the game. So keeping them in there, keeping them fed dopamine, and that dopamine also translating to your meaningful progress is a very, very strong hook. It's definitely my favorite product hack that they've done. How about you guys? What's your favorite, if not that?
I enjoy the art style a lot.
Interesting.
I thought the characters were really adorable. The pal, like, we know that the idea of pets and pals are always engaging. I like how they had two systems with the skills and the pals kind of building up your character. I like that you can choose how you evolve your character and the path that you want to go down. It's always nice to see your character get cooler stuff and become more badass. So even though I like the character design, it did remind me of like Toadstool from Mario. And so it did have a little bit of lack of uniqueness, and that I feel like they could still do something with that though. Some of the evolved characters, that they become humanoid. So
yes,
that's weird to me. So the whole thing is like, hey, it's Legend of Mushroom and you're evolving this mushroom. And at the end of your evolution, when you get to like a really cool thing, you're a human. And so to me, that was really weird and kind of took me out of the fantasy. But I'm not cool enough to be a human yet. Did you get that high?
I'm fully awakened, as they would say in the game.
you're awakened from your state. It's like, what is it, like a butterfly from a chrysalis? But so humans come from mushrooms, everyone. That's the science lesson for today.
That is my favorite part of the game. That actually is a huge motivator for me, is becoming the human bit and seeing the evolution. That is why I'm driving towards, I think the first proper humanoid character is level 100. And that is why I'm 92 with my game sitting open, just drawing lamps, battling, earning currency, doing my housekeeping to get to that state.
The power fantasy is real there. Like from an RPG perspective, you're leveling up over time. My class gets better over time. Visually, I get cooler over time and more big and strong, more humanoid. Yeah, I totally grok that.
So I guess one other thing that I liked and I didn't like, do you remember when you first opened this game and it's auto battling and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, what do I need to be doing? And I felt a little like manic and out of place until you figured out that, oh, this game just auto plays. And I was like, well, what if I die? And you don't know right away that you can't actually die. Like, dude, there's nothing you can do about that. So it was unique. And then it was the first game that has ever done that to me. And maybe I'm not playing enough idle games. Like, again, not my genre. But has any other game done that where you just open it up and your dude's
just
battling?
There's a few idle RPG games. It's not new for Legend of Mushroom or the developers. Like, other developers have done this. The sort of like continuous running motif that you're just always fighting, and then you hit a wall and then you have to push past the wall by farming up on that time period for a long time or spending money to get past it. It's quite common.
It's just, it had no instruction though. Like, you come in and I felt a little bit lost in the beginning. And so there might have maybe, again, sometimes what we're finding is that these games are targeting people that are very used to these kinds of games. And if they ever have a hope of growing the audience, you do need to do some research with players adjacent. Like, I'm a squad RPG player, right? Like, I'm an adjacent category, but if I'm not used to your mechanics, how do you do some research with those folks to be like, okay, well, maybe we need to do a little extra handholding, a little extra signposting, a little extra tutorial to help somebody know what to expect when they're coming in? Because I wanted to throw my phone against the wall when I first opened this. I'm like, what are you guys making me play? I didn't understand. And so that's what I think the challenge is for developers when you're in a specific genre. We talked about this with AFK Journey too, how they were out there marketing like, hey, you unlock all the characters, you get 200 free pulls, whatever it was. I forgot the details of what it was, but it's so inside baseball. Yeah. It's so, the information is so inside this insular group of people. If you want to grow, you have to make sure that you've got communication for different segments and audiences who might not be your core audience. Anyway, that's a little extra opining on my side of what I would do different.
Yeah, their Fatui is a little bit rough. There's also that the lamp loop where you're manually foddering gear for a while. That lasts way too long. I think that lasts until, like, I want to say like level 16 or something like that. And it needs to be like level 2. Instantly allow me to auto fodder. Because players generally don't care what gear they're picking up so long as it's better. Like, let's show me a green arrow up. Okay, I want that one.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't figure that out soon enough. And so again, it's like I felt like the game wasted my time. And yeah, don't do that to players.
All right.
Are we good? Any final thoughts?
Good. Or... Thanks for having me on.
Good. All right. Thank you, everybody. Ken, it was awesome.
Thanks for joining us, Ken. This is amazing.
Again, great write-up on the blog. If you want to reach out to Ken, you're in the Deconstructor of Fun Slack channel and LinkedIn.
I'm on LinkedIn, and I'm addicted to the Deconstructor of Fun Slack. You'll see me posting there quite frequently.
I know you covered a lot of GDC. I thought, didn't you post a lot in there of like some of the talks and stuff, if I'm remembering correctly? Yeah, thank you for doing that. It's a service to everyone. And all right. Thank you, guys. Laura, what are we doing next? Have we talked? Do I get to pick? Travel Town. Oh, no. You guys just did a whole... You went to the enemy and did a pot. I'm just kidding. They're not our enemy.
We're all friends here.
I know. I'm joking.
Okay. You've been so kind. You basically... I've been dragging you around. Do this game. Do this game. Do this game. So have a look. Dealers, your choice.
I'm really curious which direction you're going to go with that.
Ken, do you have a suggestion?
WWE Champions. Go old school. Go some you know really well. Get Zoe on. Talk with her.
Oh, my God. I can't do that again. I can't. I don't think I could open up that game. Although it would be kind of fun to see where they're at. But no, it's so mice nuts now, to Cress's point. Okay. Well, we'll figure it out. You just did Gossip Harbor and Travel Town without me. The two games that I'm literally at the end. I am an end game player on both of those games, and you don't have me join you on. Okay, fine. I
see. On 2.5 gamer, you're going to take it up with Matei.
Yeah. All right. Okay. That's fine. All right, my friends. Thank you again, and see you next time.
See ya.
See you next time.
You did it. You made it to the end of the episode. As a fan of the show, it would help us out if you subscribe and leave us a review on the podcast service of your choice. More importantly, are you a member of the Deconstructor of Fun Slack group? If you have 5 years or more of games industry experience, go to deconstructoroffun.com/slack and apply to join. Join the games industry's best professional community, filled with peers always willing to lend a hand. Or subscribe to our newsletter to get all the latest insights from the Deconstructor of Fun content creators. Thanks for listening.